Many American mothers are now grieving the loss of their children. Children who have been victimized in wars with Iraq and Afghanistan merely for the government's desire for domination. The mothers of war veterans are deprived of the least social and natural rights that ought to be granted to them. Having sacrificed their most valuable assets, the fruit of years of selfless care and devotion, these mothers have been victimized by the stubborn and wrong policies of the U.S. administration.
And when I say a loss, let me define a loss. A loss could be, in my case, it's a child. They could have the loss in the fact that their child did not come back the way they went. Okay, over. And to define that would be also, this PTSD. There's legs, there's limbs, there's injuries. There's so many things that are dealt with differently.
They pulled people who were in the National Guard from across the country. And so he was told in the latter part of 03 that his unit would be called upon. But he didn't know if it was him or somebody else.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My son joined the Marine Corps in 1999. He always wanted to be a Marine, so it was pretty well accepted in the family, except for me. I grew up in the 60s, so I understood completely what the Vietnam War did. And I tried to talk him out of it, but something he always wanted to do.
So they caught my son under false pretenses. And they caught many, many others under false pretexts. If they had told my son and the others the truth, okay, then a decision could have been made with foresight. He was an 18-year-old child, as what they are doing right now, who, excuse me, I'm sorry, young man, but you can't make up your own mind. You don't know your A from your elbow, okay? And you're a kid. Okay, it's simple.
You know, we don't feel that the military, the way it is necessary. It's overbloated. It's they do things that shouldn't be done. And I didn't want my son trained in the ways of killing.
We talked about it a lot. He was very conflicted. So, I told him that if he wanted to get out of it, I would do everything I could. I would take him to Canada. I would do anything I could to get him out of it. Because I thought it was wrong. I thought it was stupid, you know? I mean, I didn't at any point agree with an invasion of Iraq, you know? And he was smart, and he was political, and he hadn't voted for Bush. And it wasn't like he wanted to go to war, you know, but he made a commitment. And he felt very strongly about his commitment and about the people he served with.
Notice I used the word killed, did not die. Seth was killed. There's a big difference. There was a $12,000 debt that was owed to college, which they had told my son, oh, we'll pay your loans off, we'll do everything. They never did it. They never did it. They just, Rutgers, which is where he went, just said, forget about it. It's a done issue. So in that respect, I was not for my son going into the service whatsoever. And I knew that there was going to, in the back of my own mind, there was going to be a war. Even though they had told him, war? No, not happening.
You know, multiple deployments for a family is really what takes its toll. I think in the beginning, people with children in the military or family members in the military didn't like the idea of them going to war, but everyone had this sort of nationalistic pride that we have to get our revenge, we have to find the person who perpetrated this, mm-hmm. And bring them to justice. I mean, that was the whole theory behind the invasion of Afghanistan, bringing people to justice that perpetrated 9/11. Mm-hmm. But after 6 months, I realized that wasn't what was going to happen. And I think a lot of military families thought the same way.
I mean, I still don't know why you would make a military decision to take civilians, basically civilian soldiers who, you know, who had training one weekend a month and then 2 weeks in the summer. That was his whole training. And he was a social worker. That was his regular job.
These families suffer from the problems caused by physical and mental injuries of their veteran children. And they dread the reaction of the government security officers.
I do know that there are, I meet moms when I'm at an anti-war protest, but they're afraid to speak out. Some of them will eventually come forward, but they say, oh, I don't want to upset my son or daughter or husband.
That it was disloyal, that it was insulting to my son, that that I was a Al-Qaeda sympathizer, that I was, you know, all the stuff that people still say, you know, the hateful stuff that people, because they can't understand, you know, and that I was betraying my country, I was a traitor, you know. But I never believed any of that, you know. I love living. I love my country. I love the world, you know. So I didn't buy it. You know, it didn't hurt me so much because I didn't buy it. When they would say, "Your son wouldn't want you to do this."
The first thing my stepfather did was, before I even told him the story, he just hugged me, and he was glad I was back. Which I was, that was really surprising. Really the same with my mom. You know, they wanted me to not say it was political, and just to say I was tired and wanted to come home and all these things, that they might be more lenient.
If I can articulate what I believe is right and what I know that is in the hearts of other people, I've had people come up to me and say, they'll whisper to me, "You speak for me. You're saying the right thing." It's like, okay, thank you, because I understand that you might be afraid to say, or you don't feel you could, but I will do that, you know, and I'll take your encouragement and use it.
You know, mental illness is not something everybody understands, and I know it takes a toll on the family. You know, when somebody is sick, mentally ill, it takes a toll on the family. So one wonders how much support the family also needs in order to cope with the person that is showing all these symptoms. Because, you know, often it involves, like I said, using illegal substances, drinking alcohol, not sleeping well, and sometimes there might be some violence even, you know, those kind of issues. And how do you respond to that? And how do you provide the support that the person needs?
A lot of the women I know have had cervical cancer, breast cancer, you know, just lots of ailments. We talk about it amongst ourselves, and we know that it's stress related, because it has to be. You're up at night getting phone calls. You can't work all day because you're a wreck, and that takes a toll on your system. And after 3 or 4 deployments of your child, I myself have had, you know, very bad health issues since he left.
The family also has to cope with the changes that the person will have as a result of having been exposed to traumatic events, as a result of experiencing trauma, etc. So there have to be multiple interventions in order to provide the person with the appropriate help.
Each time a soldier is sent to war, he himself, his parents, and other family members are struck by severe tensions. They are separated, fretfully wondering whether they will ever be able to see each other again.
He was trying to be upbeat, you know. He didn't want us to worry about him. He missed us, and he was tired. He was, you know, he wouldn't tell me he was scared, you know. But
as a mother, you could hear it.
Yeah, I could hear it, and you know, I knew that he was, and he really missed his, he has a son, he really missed his son, you know, and his wife. But I think he was, what he was trying to do was make the best out of the situation. And he befriended Iraqi kids, and he has, would throw, he would get candy to give to the kids and try to, you know. I mean, I don't, he didn't, he was not one of those kind of people who was militant or a warrior, you know, kind of character. He was a really big guy. He was 6'4". But he was really kind of gentle-hearted and always trying to make people laugh.
You know, living through other periods of time, I don't remember military families standing up against wars. Normally, it was either the veterans who were war resistors or who were whistleblowers, but not really family members. Family members always stayed in the background.
The bottom line is that's what the most important thing. To have somebody else to cry on their shoulders, to get your anger and frustration out, is the most important thing amongst military families. Because, as I said at the beginning, most people don't understand what you're going through. Okay? They can't. So, yeah, we talk about the good times. We talk about the bad times. We talk about how we take the next step to the next day. How are we going to get through that next day? Does that next day mean have a meaning, a special meaning?
The last time that I came home on leave and saw my family and looked at them like, I might not see you again, that's when it really got intense. And I said, I will never come home until this is done.
As a matter of fact, he was the first guardsman, the first National Guardsman from Pennsylvania to have been killed since 1945. So all those times he told me, don't worry, the National Guard never goes to war and people in the Guard don't get killed. He's the first.
I mean, when you start speaking out against a war, you're labeled, you know, treasonous, unpatriotic, crazy. I mean, you know, you just automatically get a label saying.
I'm not saying that it's the one thing, but it helps to have some others that you know have been through this experience that you can call, laugh, and cry with. Because unless you have gone, and I'm going to go now to death, unless you have had the death of a child, which you should never experience because I don't wish it on you, okay, you have no idea what it is. Normal progression of life is your parents go first. Your children don't go before you. And that's the difference. There's a big, big, big difference there.
I think you'll talk to any military member and they'll tell you, we're going to do anything it takes to get home. I want to see my wife and kids. I want to see my girlfriend and boyfriend. I want to see my mom and dad.
One of the serious problems that the Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans face is unemployment. They are easily dismissed from their previous jobs, and after returning from war, they are not entitled to go back to the jobs they had before.
In terms of people that were small company owners and they got called up in the National Guard and Reserve, especially people like doctors, people had CPA firms or marketing firms, people where you've got to count on a small cabal of customers, and you get called away for a year and a half, those customers aren't waiting for you to come back after 18 months. They go start doing business with someone else, which means that you go out of business.
Well, they feel as though they've given their lives for their country. Many of them have lost the physical capacity to do something. Some of them lost arms and legs. Some of them have lost mental capacity. And in exchange for that, their country has basically turned their back on them.
We do have a big problem in the younger veterans, particularly those in the National Guard, because of the two-year call-up policy that the Department of Defense has. A lot of companies don't want to hire you if you're in the, say, Georgia National Guard, because you're going to be gone for 2 years. And they can't run their company with you being pulled up and gone. And that's why the unemployment rate with the younger veterans is actually someplace in the 20% range.
I do not think that soldiers and Marines who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are being properly served. I think they're just getting over-medicated and treated like problems, and they're getting thrown in jail, and they're getting kicked out of the Army without benefits. And it is a problem that goes on and on and on, and it's a real scourge.
Some veteran soldiers suffer severe physical and movement impairments. Some others come home with mental disorders.
I know that I have to. I guess I really don't have a choice either way. I mean, I suppose I could live off of my disability compensation from the VA by myself, but if I have hopes of having a family, I need to go out and work to support them.
And yet they were suddenly forced to go into other people's lands, people whose language they didn't speak, the culture they didn't understand, and they didn't want to be occupiers. Other veterans were so traumatized that they began a terrible kind of mental and psychological illness that affected them and their families. They couldn't understand or control what we call post-traumatic stress. This has affected hundreds of thousands of people.
So if you're talking about 20% of 2 million people, that's 400,000 people who will be looking for mental health care. I've heard stories from my veteran friends that it's very, very difficult to get an appointment.
You add up what it takes to treat somebody as an outpatient, where you do a lot of preventive work, by the way, as opposed to hospitalize them, which is much more expensive, or the third option, they end up incarcerated in this country.
Yeah.
Almost always a lot mentally, now you know the number of mentally ill people that are behind bars is incredible.
I've had a few friends that have gone for employment with local law enforcement agencies or federal law enforcement agencies that have actually been denied because of their experiences in Iraq or Afghanistan, even though that goes to their credit. A lot of those agencies would rather have someone fresh out of high school, fresh out of college, that doesn't have, I guess, a war taint on them.
Unemployment then leads to the homelessness of U.S. veterans returning from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, in different cities along many streets in the U.S., you see veterans back from war, homeless, because they do not have a job.
You can walk up and down these streets of D.C. and at any given time see dozens of homeless men and women, and the majority of them were in the military. You know, the U.S. government has forgotten about them after it gets all it can from them and uses them to oppress and destroy people in other countries. It leaves them here on the streets to die.
For every 100 soldiers coming back, there are far more who are injured. So the injured veteran is the one who is most likely to become homeless, because they will either, in some cases, succumb to substance abuse problems. They may have a mental health problem that at some point will fracture their home life. There are a lot of different reasons for people becoming homeless, but we can almost guarantee you that the number will increase.
It is a violation of every principle of this country that there should be homeless veterans sleeping on the streets of our cities. It is a violation of all our principles that we don't find jobs for veterans when they come home, that we have all the money in the world to spend on bombs and the latest weapons of destruction, but we don't have money to even take care of our veterans when they come home.
The American people are now well aware of the horrific effects and consequences of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The financial situation and economic corruption of Wall Street has plagued everyone.
We have cities and states almost going bankrupt every day. We have teachers that are being fired or laid off because we can't afford to have them educating our children. And so when the American people look at all of these issues together, they're trying to say, how much can we afford to spend on defense, on the military, on economic issues, on jobs, and on Iraq, and on Afghanistan.
You know, they continue to make them Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, and when they come home, you know, it's a big world, especially in a country that during this this terrible recession while the bankers and the rich are getting bailed out. People on the streets are, you know, they're dying. People are losing their homes.
And I told them about how many soldiers are getting psychotropic drugs who are in country and how dangerous that is to everybody. And they seemed to not know that, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then when we talked about Afghanistan, they said, well, we disagree with you. We have a mission there, and we're gonna fulfill the mission there. And we said, you know, it's the same story. You know, you can't win this with the way that you're trying to win this. And so they agreed to disagree with us, right? It was very disappointing to me, you know, because I thought that they were smarter.
Or I go out, you know, to all my protests, I'm always loading up my car with something, and they would ask me, you know, like, why do you do this? And I'm like, because we're wrong. We're killing innocent people, and our soldiers are dying for nothing.
Look back at how the veterans of Vietnam were treated. They were treated like garbage. People would spit on them. They had no respect for them. Their homelessness, their truancy, everything was despicable. Okay? We did not want our soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, more Iraq at that point, now Afghanistan, coming back and having and feeling like they aren't being honored, okay? And not to be treated the way the Vietnam veterans were treated.
That's why I keep telling it and telling it. Because I want people to understand how stupid and such a terrible loss of all the lives that are lost for no good reason, for nothing that anybody can now justify. There is no justification. It was a terrible, deliberate mistake.
I mean, I was lucky. My son is home. He came home. He's badly scarred from his tours.
My son is very close to me, okay? Yeah, this is his sweater, okay? I always try to make sure that there's something that makes me happy upstairs, where I told you my den is, on my roll top desk is a picture of my son, my husband, my son, my daughter, my grandson, and a little drawing that my grandson make. Okay, I go up there, and that's my sanctuary. My son is there, my husband is there.
That's after Sher was killed, and our whole family became very involved. And that was his dad, who since has died. And that was a sign that he made to carry. And I have a big sign that I carry that just has Sher's face on it. And it says, "We mourn Sergeant Sherwood Baker." So we spoke out before he was killed. And when he was killed, we sat here that night and we made a decision that nobody was going to take his death and wrap flags around it and call it good. And we knew it was wrong. We knew it was a terrible waste of a good life. And that if we would honor him by speaking out against what we knew was wrong.
If you're asking me about parents having their children join the military, I would say to you and to them, think twice. Think three times. Four times.
First of all, we can't forget the people who are lost, all the people, the soldiers, the Iraqis, the Afghan people, the lives that will never be full, and all the people who grieve for those lives. And to not forget our responsibility as human beings to care for each other, to stand for each other, and to speak and work against war. And that war is a betrayal of God's plan for us. And we're compelled to speak against it.